This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Michael McAdams, president of the Advanced Biofuels Association. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. ABFA's Michael McAdams is next. Wanted to take a moment and talk to soybean farmers. Nearly 500,000 of you are in the U.S. growing over 4 billion bushels of soybeans a year. And the Soy Checkoff is working hard to grow demand, innovating, testing, and showcasing new uses in new industries such as firefighting foam, tires, straws, shoes, or 1,000 other products. To learn more, visit unitedsoybean.org and keep on growing. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Michael McAdams founded the Advanced Biofuels Association in 2006 with a focus on transportation fuels and carbon reduction. ABA members now include large petroleum refiners, new technology, and feedstock providers. He says the Biden administration's push to electric vehicles helped to unite the industry. Looking ahead, he's well aware of the difference between what candidates say and elected officials do.
And there's no question that politicians like a good camera shot, particularly in a farmer's field where they're making ethanol. But the reality is that the economics drive this. The thing that drives it from the statutory standpoint is, A, the Renewable Fuel Standard. That is the single most important law on the books, which has mandates in it. And now that we're past 2021, the EPA does a set rule. The last one they did was for 3 years. The next one will be put out in March of next year. I anticipate it will be 2 or 3 years again. But that will put numbers in there, and that the numbers that they will put in there will be mandates for the obligated refining parties to have RINs for compliance. And that program really drives the market and really helps the market grow. This is an option that, you know, I think Mr. Trump would be well served to understand that the more gallons we use, the more carbon reduction we get at the lowest prices, because that's really where we are in the advanced biofuels versus some of these other newer technologies like e-fuels or hydrogen or green methanol or green ammonia. Those are all systems that have to be built. They're not in existence. And we have an existing pipeline system and refining system and distribution system that's already in place that can use the fuels that our members make. And that is a real advantage economically.
The 45th president said he supported ethanol, but then small refinery exemptions took place during his administration. Do you think the 47th president would have learned from his previous actions?
Well, I hope that we don't go back there. I would note that I personally was the first one to sue the 45th president on the SREs, because according to Professor Scott Irwin in Illinois, I mean, it literally transferred $7 billion worth of value from the farm industry and from those making the fuel to those in the refining industry. And, you know, since I represent so many of these big refineries, I'm delighted to tell you a majority of my, you know, all of my members who are big do not want SREs. They are long past since the three-year requirement that was in the original statute that said you will in 3 years have to have these compliance. What you find is really probably 6 to 10 facilities that are small enough, they have to be under 75,000 barrels a day, that might qualify, but it was clear in the statute, and it was clear in some of the court cases that followed it, that it wasn't intended to last until 2025. That just wasn't what it was intended to do. So I'm hoping we put that to bed once and for all. The Biden administration did do a good job on that piece, and I hope they don't resurrect it in the new administration.
Well, when I talked to Growth Energy and to the Renewable Fuels Association, they understood that there might be a reason for an SRE, but the part that they had the big issue with is there wasn't a reallocation.
And the problem we have there is they've never made 15 billion gallons in the history of the program. And so from a practical day-to-day standpoint, what is really happening under the RFS with the reduction in the use of gasoline from what was 148.5 billion gallons in 2018, that was the high water mark, to where we are today, which is 136 billion. There's been a decrease in the ability to put 10% ethanol in a majority of the gasoline. And so you see the numbers of ethanol RINs generated per year in the last couple of years averaging around 13.9 to 14.2. And the D4 pool, which is biodiesel and renewable diesel, has been making up about $900 million of that shortfall. And so that's another thing that the EPA is going to have to look at in the set rule. Are they going to really give the people that make the fuel the credit? Are they going to continue to allow the $15 billion to stand there when it's just not really happening? So that's a tough one to tackle politically for lots of reasons, particularly when you look at the red map in the Midwest where all the ethanol is made. That's a politically tough issue to tackle.
I am interested in the Musk factor under this new Trump administration. It was the Biden administration strongly supporting electric vehicles and using funds from other sources of government to help to subsidize the sale of electric vehicles. There is a place for electric vehicles, and even the renewable fuels industry said we support an all of the above. But if the country is going to have electric vehicles, do we have the electric generation and the infrastructure to deliver for those vehicles of people who want to drive them?
Well, first question is, can people afford them? And the last time I looked at it, they were more expensive than the internal combustion engine. The second question is, clearly, is there enough charging stations around? And the verdict is clearly out on that currently in terms of, do you really have enough of those stations out there to people can use them? The third question is, what if I live in an apartment building? How does that work for me to have a charger in the garage and apartment building with everybody else in the building? That's not even been tackled, not even thought about. So I think there are a number of challenges on the electric vehicle side that we probably got out a little front of the horse on this one with the cart. It's going to take a little more time to figure out how to deal with each of those specific issues. But there's no question that at this point in time, advanced biofuels and biofuels writ large we can grow that significantly from where we are today. And that seems to be the lowest cost strategy for carbon reduction. And it's also the lowest cost in terms of people who have older cars and can't afford the electric vehicles to continue to do what they need to do to go to the grocery store and to do other things in their life. So our association recognizes that we need an all-of-the-above energy strategy, that the electric vehicle has a role to play, but it's probably going to take a little more time to get to where people wanted to go than originally thought.
If farmers are going to be able to participate, if the country's going to be able to move in this direction, if we're going to have enough sustainable aviation fuel, if we're going to have enough renewable product, the question is, I guess beginning even in the lame duck session, Michael, what does Washington need to do? Because plants aren't built overnight and they don't come free. What's it take to grow this industry and make it work?
Okay, so we have to have a common sense reaction to the RFS program plus the tax provisions. And they're not in harmony right now, and they weren't written in harmony statutorily. So that is a problem that will need to be reckoned with. Number one, if you had an opportunity to choose between 40B, which is the SAF provision currently in the law, and 45Z, you would probably choose 40B. Let me explain why. Under 40B, you get $1.25 support in the tax code starting from zero carbon reduction. You just get $1.25. Under 45Z, you don't get anything until you deliver a 50% carbon reduction. And currently, we don't know what the models are, so we can't measure it. So the guess is it's somewhere around 23 cents. Under 40B, if you exceed the 50% reduction, you get 1 cent for every carbon reduction point you achieve towards up to 100%. So for someone like Gevo, who's planning a net zero facility, they would get $1.75 out of the box on 40B. Same thing, wouldn't be $1.75, but someone like LanzaJet would start at $1.25 and probably, let's just say 70%. They'd get, you know, 20 more points, so 20 more cents. So that'd be $1.45, which is really kind of the difference between the cost of making renewable diesel and the cost of making jet fuel. There's a difference there. That recognizes it. 45Z doesn't recognize it, right? So these are very complex. On top of that, we do not know whether, because we have not had the rules, whether this administration, when it releases the rules, is going to make it primarily the Argonne-GREET model that drives the calculation, or whether there's an optionality with CORSIA, or there's some requirement between both models. We do not know that. And so we really can't do the calculations now. So as of January 1, we're looking at a potential of a loss of 70 to 80 cents a gallon in the market, right? It was supplied by the government and has to be replaced somewhere. And so that is something that is raising a lot of concerns in the industry now. There are some folks already trying to suggest in the lame duck that we need to address an extension of 40A and 40B until we have further clarity in the future on 45Z at a minimum. It's probably hard to get that done. I applaud Senator Grassley for raising it in one of your calls this week. He's right on the money to suggest we ought to consider this and be aware of this, because you do not want the train to come off the tracks on January 1 because of the 70 cents that gets lost. And if failing that, then we're going to have a tax bill next year. We could try to do something there as well. But this is something that needs to be dealt with very quickly in the short term, because not only is 45Z 3 years and these facilities cost $2 to $3 billion to make, and you can't remunerate $3 billion in 3 years, the aspirational aspect of it, you know, really lacks the common sense of how the market finances these big projects. So we need to do some real homework here, and we need to really consider how we get these provisions to work in harmony, which they currently don't, in order to drive the market. Now, the last thing I want to say on the subject is you can't forget about the RFS. And so where we are right now, for instance, in the D4 pool for biodiesel and renewable diesel, is the mandate is 3.3 billion gallons. The mandate is at least a billion gallons under what the current production in the United States of those fuels are. Why is that? Because they didn't want the cost in the 4 pool to be impacted on the cost analysis of the overall program, so they buried the extra billion gallons in the RIN total in the 5 pool of 6,881,000,000 RINs. That is in the current statute. I have had suggested the EPA at a minimum in 2026, when they have the ability to create a new standard, that they should raise those numbers a minimum of a billion gallons to reflect the actual gallons that are being made in the 4 pool. My analysis was done by Lipow and Associates in Houston, Texas, and he says it's somewhere between 7.3 and 7.6 billion gallons of biodiesel and renewable diesel production by 2026. That standard needs to be lifted to reflect that actual production. It could even go higher than a billion relative to the RIN bank balances, which we expect to grow by a billion gallons in 24 and a billion RINs in 25. So there's room to really make a significant adjustment there for the 4 pool. And what we can't have is we can't have people talking about limiting the amount of feedstocks, which are not limited under the RFS, under the tax law, because if you limit the amount of feedstocks, you're going to put pressure not only on the ability to continue to get the 7.6 billion gallons, but you're going to put pressure on the ability to have 911 million gallons of actual fuels come into the country, which are not recognized under 45Z. So this is a mess right now. There's a lot of moving pieces here that need to be dealt with in a common sense fashion, And obviously the Congress is going to need to look at this going forward.
So there are two issues on feedstocks. Number one, has been raised by Senator Grassley is used cooking oil and whether what's coming into the country is actually used cooking oil and if it should be subsidized. And the second is what we call bundling. Because 40B required if corn was going to be used for ethanol and qualify, you had to have a cover crop, you had to plant no-till, and you had to use a nitrogen inhibitor. Those don't work for all parts of the country. There's a lack of common sense and flexibility even for that crop, not to mention soybeans and others that might qualify. You got two issues here that need to be resolved.
Right, I agree. And there's some other folks that have talked about a safe harbor. I think there's a lot of credibility in those conversations. These are things that need to be sorted out in the new administration because they're fundamental to making that leap that we need to make where the farmers themselves become an active participant in carbon reduction in terms of the way they manage their fields, the way they use their feedstocks, what kind of feedstocks they use. And then you can't have a one-size-fits-all on cover crops. That just doesn't work. So there has to be more flexibility than is currently was currently in the proposed rules. All of that is up for conversation in 2025. I think that, you know, we as an industry really need to circle the wagons on this one and work together. And I think people will be very, very happy to know that a lot of my big refining members will be right there with the farmers and the producers of biofuels to support those types of things because carbon reduction is carbon reduction and you can't ignore the soil carbon sequestration. It's got to be a part of the original count and you got to count all the carbon.
Well, this is a tremendous gut punch, and I'll use the soybean farmer for an example. They look at sustainable aviation fuel and what the potential of that market is, and we're talking about now crushing the soybean for the oil instead of the meal as a primary target. But then when you look at the rules and the regulations and the stipulations that are down the line, you don't know whether you get that market or not. And if you don't get it, then what's your future financially?
Yeah, and you just spent $6 billion to improve your crush. $6 billion. You spent $2 billion on being able to do one of the cover crops. So there's $8 billion that's been invested in the last couple of years to try to help grow this program. And then the rules come out, and it's sideways. And it doesn't create the certainty that anybody would need to move forward with confidence. All that has to get fixed.
So used cooking oil is eligible, whether here in the U.S. or from somewhere else. We brought
That's
in
correct.
Over 3 billion pounds of used cooking oil, and a lot of that from China, with no guarantees that it's actually used cooking oil. And some say, don't subsidize anything that's being imported, and others say, cut it off and don't let it come in at all.
I'm a free market guy, and when we're talking about fuels around the world, the one thing the market around the world does is it allocates the most efficient ways to get energy to people around the world. It's a free market. There, until we had the Russian invasion of Ukraine, you had the most efficient routes in the oil and gas trade. That has been somewhat upheaval since the invasion. I caution people not to cut their nose off to spite their face, and here's the specific example I would give. So I have lots of conversations with the EPA, and the number one challenge that I have in terms of trying to raise the mandates under the RFS, which is the number one thing my members want me to do, whether it's the agricultural biofuel producers or whether it's the refiners, is they want the actual numbers to reflect what's actually being made so it doesn't undercut the value of the RIN. And what you had in 24 and 25 was they undercut the value of the RIN by undercutting the mandates for compliance. And, you know, the ethanol guys have been pretty consistent on this as well. And so if you cut that amount of foreign feedstock in, what EPA is going to do immediately is say, I can't raise the number of billion gallons because the feedstock's not there. And there's a billion gallons worth of RINs being made right now because of foreign feedstock. So I've got to leave it where it is. Well, that's a death knell for the industry because now you don't have any growth. And then if you worry about the fact that 45Z doesn't reward people who make the actual full fuel come into the country, Now you got another billion gallons, 911 million, that's imported. So what happens to that? That creates real uncertainty. And by the way, those gallons aren't allocated equally because the Northeast uses a lot of biodiesel and renewable diesel in their heating oil. And they're short up there. And so that's why it goes to the Northeast. The arbitrage is up there. So, I mean, these are really complex, significant, impactful, everyday cost considerations for all those folks that voted for Mr. Trump. And I would hope that we have an opportunity to have a reset around these sets of topics that you just raised and get them right. I don't think they're right now. I don't think we got them right.
So let's introduce, as we come to a close here, the topic of pipelines. The Biden administration had an opinion on the XL pipeline, and then there is this needed pipeline, as said by the renewable fuel industry, of a carbon pipeline so that we can sequester. Talk about the two of those and the needs.
Well, I'm hoping that we, with this new administration, can actually address the permitting issues that didn't get solved. The Biden administration promised the senator from West Virginia that they would deal with the permitting if he would support their overall green energy package. Well, he supported their green energy package, and they never got around to doing the permit reform. And so we still need to come back to permit reform and deal with that, because you can't have you can't manage the carbon reduction, and this is what's such a frustrating time. The farmers have the ability to really help monetize carbon reduction at the farm, and that would be a nice pocket of revenue for them to have in the future. But you can't have it both ways. You can't block a pipeline because you don't like progress, and then turn around and say, well, you got to have carbon reduction at X, Y, and Z. And, you know, I'm frustrated with, quite candidly, the environmental community, who wants to have it both ways, and they want perfect instead of good. It's time to return to common sense. Let's get as much carbon reduction as cheaply as we can, and that pipeline will help facilitate it in the future.
Well, Michael McAdams, we want to thank you very much for being with us on this edition of Open Mic. Clearly, a lot of issues addressing the nation toward energy, especially as we look at the transition of power. We know that your industry has been involved, and you'll continue to be involved. But thanks for being here, and today is Open Mic, and, sir, you've got the last word.
Well, I just want to thank all the farmers out there for what they do every day. I enjoy the food I eat, and I respect the culture of rural America in terms of their contribution to this nation. And I really do believe that working together, we can do even better, and we can deliver the carbon reduction we need, and a lot of it can come from having real rules that count all the carbon instead of pretending that the carbon doesn't get sequestered. It does get sequestered. So let's count all the carbon. Let's all start from the same base for monitoring. Let's not let the world play games on models to say they got something that they really didn't. And let's make sure everybody plays by the same set of rules, including China and others, so that when we don't have these problems with feedstocks coming in where people believe one potato chip made a million gallons. That's not fair either. So there has to be equity, and there has to be mechanisms to make sure people play by the rules. Blake, Jeff, thank you so much for inviting me. It's an honor to be on this program and to be part of what you're doing.
Our thanks to Michael McAdams, president of the Advanced Biofuels Association, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the Soy Checkoff. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Daly.